Welcome, everyone. This is Liberty Southwest podcast number 37. Today is December 15th, 2014, and this week we will discuss how voting initiatives and referendums tie into liberty. Tonight we have Eric Taylor, Chelsea Camo, and myself, Kirk Pettis. Chelsea, you want to take it away?
Sure. So recently we've been talking about different topics, and we've really been discussing how individuals can make a difference, you know, and how we as a people can start to institute what we want to see in this country as opposed to what maybe our elected officials are bringing forth. And two of the ways in which citizens can do that are referendum and initiative. And as I started doing some research for this podcast, I realized that what I had commonly understood as referendum is really more similar to what is actually called initiative. So an initiative is where citizens essentially draft a proposed law, and then it goes to a vote. So there's direct initiative, and then there's indirect initiative. So a direct initiative is where, you know, it just goes onto the ballot. An indirect initiative is where citizens will draft a proposed law, and then they'll present it to the legislature. The legislature can either adopt it outright, or they can try and figure out how to enact that. Or if they can't figure out how to do it themselves, then it gets pushed back to the people to then vote on it and put it into law. And that's kind of what I thought. You know, we hear a lot of referendums, like we talked to, you know, or we hear about, you know, the people in Colorado and Washington and how they legalized marijuana. Well, that came from the people, not from the legislature. And I feel like I heard the term referendum being thrown around a lot, and I thought that that's what that was, that it was, you know, the people voting on an idea from the people. But it turns out that's more of initiative itself, whereas referendum is where the legislature acts, and then the people can intervene, basically. So if a state puts in, you know, the legislature passes a law and the people don't like it, they can step in before that law is enacted and shoot it down, essentially, via a referendum. And that would be like a popular referendum. What I thought was interesting is that the idea of initiative and referendum really came out of the late 19th century, early 20th, like 1898, I think, was when the first state really pushed that as an amendment to their state constitution. Basically, because there's this growing trend that people weren't trusting that their government was representing them fairly. They found that lobbied interests were having much more power over what got passed or didn't than, you know, what was good for the people. And they found that there was a lot of corruption in the representative democracy. So they said one way for us to hedge against this is to give ourselves the right, you know, to, you know, put forth an initiative or a referendum. And that's really where it came from. So about half of the states in the country have the right, you know, to put forth an initiative or a referendum or both in one way or another. And then about half of them don't. And unfortunately, Minnesota has neither an initiative or a referendum option.
And when you're talking about, I kind of thought of Colorado's situation as being a referendum, but, you know, in looking to it a little bit more, this was actually a initiative measure as well, right? That wasn't necessarily a referendum.
Right. From everything that I've heard, I thought that it came from the people pushing it to the ballot. Mm-hmm. Is that how you guys understood it, or how you guys understood as far as what happened?
Sorry, what did you ask?
So everything that I heard, all the news that I saw about what had happened in Colorado and in Washington was that the people said, hey, this is something we want. Let's get the signatures and let's put it for a vote. Was that how you understood it?
Yeah. So like, it was definitely more of an initiative. And that's,
yeah.
in Colorado and Washington both have initiatives. Is that right? They allow those? They must then?
Let's look at the map here. Yes, they both have initiative and popular referendum. And it's interesting, most of the western side, so basically the Dakotas over basically all have initiative and popular referendum, including, you know, Alaska. But then, you know, Texas, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and then most of the East Coast have neither. So it's really interesting how that split itself out.
Yeah, and I'm looking, and the Colorado legislation was marked as Colorado Amendment 64, which is an initiative, and the Washington legislation was marked as Washington Initiative 502. I was under the impression that these were both referendums, but they. To your point, Chelsea, those initiatives, each initiative was actually, they were initiatives rather than referendums.
And what I think is interesting is that growing up, I never really even knew, and maybe that it's partly because while I was educated in Minnesota, I never really heard about this, even the idea of an initiative before. I don't think it was really talked about. So this, to me, is something that is really inspiring, because if we could get a state constitutional amendment to allow for initiative and referendum, it really does enable the people to serve as almost like a fourth branch of government and to, you know, increase the control or prevent, you know, too much corruption or misrepresentation from occurring within our what's supposed to be a representational democracy.
Yeah, I personally don't recall ever learning about citizen initiatives. Do you, Kirk?
The what? Well, I keep getting sidetracked here.
Well, do you recall hearing too much conversation around citizen initiatives? As a way to enact change or
in like liberty law. Meetings and stuff,
or even, you know, in the context
in
of school
or
wherever.
Anywhere.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't remember learning that in civics.
It's not something that that I've been taught.
But all three of us did grow up in Minnesota, I guess. So, and it is a fairly new measure. So if civics is more based on, but.
No, it's not actually. Like the first state to allow for initiative and referendum was in 1898.
Yeah, but that's.
Let me see here. 1898.
So
where was it?
Then that was South Dakota. Country.
Well, this isn't a new thing. I mean, it certainly wasn't before either, you know, any of us went to school. So.
Well, what do you guys think about initiatives being to make law or just to decriminalize or to restate law, or I don't know how to put it. So the main thing why we brought this subject up was, you know, talking about all the bills or what we thought were referendums were really initiatives about the marijuana stuff going through the states. And they need 60%, right, to pass?
I don't believe
I'm pretty sure it's 60% because maybe it depends on the states.
I
thought it needs a supermajority usually, I think, so it's 60%.
The Colorado amendment passed with 55.32%.
And so they only need less, because I know Florida had 59% and they needed 60%.
And the Washington initiative passed with 55.7%.
So it's, I think, because it's part of an amendment to each state's constitution, it's a state-by-state thing. Yeah, so there's not like a nationwide, you know, or like a federal standard for what you have to have.
Yeah, but does it really, I mean, is it really a constitutional amendment? I think it's a little strong opinion.
To allow for a state to allow referendums and initiatives.
That has to be a constitutional amendment?
Okay. Yeah. So
we don't have one in Minnesota. The ability isn't there.
So there'd have to be an amendment to our state constitution for Minnesota to be able to do.
Right.
Right.
And now, here's what's interesting, though. Like, Minnesota's put it up to a vote like 3 or 4 times. And every single time, they've had more than 50% of the people vote. They've had more people vote yes than to vote no for the initiative and referendum amendment. But here's where it gets tricky is that because of this whole supermajority thing, anybody who abstains from voting on it gets put on the no side.
No.
Yeah. So like if someone abstains, then that counts as a no. So even though every single time we voted to try and get initiative and referendum in Minnesota, there have been more yeses than noes. It's been the people that have said nothing that then tipped the scales the other direction, and it hasn't been successful. And the last time, I think it was like 1980, the last time we tried.
And the interesting thing, I'm sure Chelsea, you've noticed this as well, is that as you get further west, there are the ability to initiate referendums and initiatives gets stronger and stronger. And most of the western states, you have that ability. And as you get east, most don't.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that there would be this trend of in the west where they've passed this and they allow for that, and the farther east you go, they don't?
My immediate thought would be kind of a libertarian streak runs deeper in the West and what's more progressive in the East, but that's just, that's just my most immediate
speculation.
And it would be how long the more established and entrenched the government is.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, you know, since it didn't even start till, most of the states were fairly new when this idea came into being, I guess, so it was probably easier to get through, and a lot of the current politicians at the time were totally fine with it instead of fighting it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Obviously,
that's a good point.
That's what I would, that would be my guess.
Yeah, because you figure California was only like 50 years old at the time this movement was going on.
Yeah, and then, what was I going to say? But, yeah, so I find it really funny that now this happened in Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. is a district. It's, it's not a state. If you view an initiative in a state, then that state's Congress still has to vote and enact the law that the people want, and they will face the ramifications that they don't.
That's like why it's so powerful. So like an initiative is voted on by the people. Like the government has to enact it and they have to abide by the wishes of the people, but they don't get to then vote on what the people voted on. Like once the people have spoken on an initiative, that becomes law. Like that's the reason why initiative is so Kirk.
It's not instantly law. It still takes till the next session comes into play that it's becomes the law. And I always thought that it was still the current this is why when it happens, it's not
like
instantly legalized
for
specific marijuana stuff. It's not instantly legalized on November 4th or 5th or whatever day Tuesday it ends up being on.
Let's broaden the spectrum here a little bit. Just so everybody knows who's listening, this is not just about marijuana. That's not why we're talking about it.
I know, but this is an easy way to show and talk about it.
Yeah. But
because over time there's been 2,000
the legislature can't just shut it down and say like, oh, you people want this and you all voted on it and you put forth this initiative, you got all the signatures and you voted that you want this, now we're gonna shoot it down. There'd be no point.
I think they actually can. But there'd just be there'd be hell to pay for them, and they wouldn't risk doing it, is my opinion. But I mean, but that's this is why I was bringing it up is because of what's happening in D.C. right now. In Washington D.C., they're really fighting to make this not happen. And I've seen both articles from both ways that slipped into this new omnibus spending bill. Is that, the writer introduced by Representative Andy Harris Republican from Maryland, says none of the funds contained in this act may be used to enact any law, rule, or regulation to legalize or otherwise reduce penalties associated with the possession, use, or distribution of Schedule I substances, which is a direct attack against Initiative 71 that was passed by the residents of D.C. So this is an underhanded way of blocking it through this new omnibus spending bill. And so that's my point, is that since this happened in D.C. and the residents of D.C. don't enact their vote for their leaders, because it's a district and state, and all the politicians there are from around the entire country. So it's a totally different quandary to be in, to where these politicians look like, and it's the federal rule that's nationwide that is against marijuana, and it classifies it as a Schedule One. So it'll, I don't know, I just find it really interesting that our Congress has the chutzpah to block this Initiative 71 that D.C. passed.
Well, see, I think what you're getting confused here is this is the conflict between state and federal law, and this is not a new thing. This is not new at all. And so it's not about blocking a state initiative. This is the difference between federal law and state law. I mean, when an initiative goes through, it goes through, and it's not about whether or not the legislature can shoot it down. It's about whether the federal government feels like they can overstep their bounds into what rights the state has. You know, if they can say, well, the federal law supersedes your, you know, state law. And so it's an entirely different conversation to be had. When it comes to initiative and referendums, this is in relation to state rules and regulations, and not as it relates to the federal government at all.
Yeah, but it does in D.C. is what I'm saying.
Well, D.C. is an outlier, right? It's the outlier. So,
yeah, well, that's why. Yeah,
it's not really applicable to the
where our federal government resides. And they proclaim we're a republic, and the local populace there has voted for an initiative, and they're blocking it. Just kind of shows the state of our affairs in the United States. This is what I'm kind of want to talk about. But
it's interesting how they did that, and I haven't really put in too much thought into why that occurred, but why it was such a big deal for the federal government to basically say, the citizens of Washington, D.C. have decided to legalize or to put forth an initiative, and it's passed. And they slide it into an omnibus bill saying that you can't do this. But yet you have in Colorado and Washington, which are states rather than, you know, a federal district, the Obama administration has, for the most part, allowed them to do, you know, allowed each state to preside over, over the legalization and the enforcement. And that's one thing I don't fully get about D.C. is why it was such a, more of an issue for the government there, maybe because that's where they are, where they actually work versus the other states, but that was at least a little interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably more, I would guess, like a technicality. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't even see it listed on the map for an area where they can have initiative and referendum. And maybe this is because this is like listing the states, and since it's not a state,
it's a district. So it's
right.
Like you're saying, it's an outlier. It's a unique situation there.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But as far as you know, initiatives and referendums are concerned, I think that this is really the opportunity that we have as a people to fight against corruption in our government and seek something that more successfully represents our interests and the type of society that we really want. I mean, so instead of, you know, voting for someone that then votes for something else, which, yes, we will still have representational government, you know, for the majority of items. But when we're seeing situations where the people are wanting something and there's a majority of people that all agree and the legislature is ignoring it, or with a referendum where the legislature passes something and it's something that the people do not want and are not interested in, this is a way for us to really put our voice in there when our voice is not being heard by the legislature. I mean, it just seems like, so I know that we, you know, we have the three branches of government that are all supposed to sort of keep each other in check. But at the same time, you know, they're all three branches of the government, you know, they're not of the people. So it makes sense to then have, you know, this one more branch, you know, but rather than it being part of the machine, it's something outside of the machine that can help to serve to monitor and keep things in check. And it seems like initiative and referendum are two great ways to do that. The only unfortunate thing then is to say that, well, there isn't, or probably never will be or could be, a federal initiative or referendum.
Why is that?
I mean, do you think? I don't know. I just figured it probably would never happen, but I have nothing to back that up.
I just guess,
kind of assumed.
Has it been done before? I don't know that it has been.
I don't think so. I think that these are just state things.
Yeah. And I don't know why it would be possible or not possible to vote on to me it should be just as possible to vote on a federal initiative or referendum as it would be for a state, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, here's an article that says that Americans are in favor of a national referenda on key issues. But from what I understand, there isn't anything. I mean, it seems like this is almost the key. Like, I mean, as you talk to people around election time and there are these different topics going through, and I noticed that the majority of people are on one side of an issue and then the government goes the other way with it despite, you know, public outcry saying, no, this is not what we want as a people. This seems to be the answer to that. You know, even if they vote it through, if we could have a referendum to say, nope, sorry guys, this doesn't represent us and we're going to use our votes to tell you that. And like, we're not going to allow this to happen.
See, I'm a little torn on the matter though too. I mean,
right,
you can't
now,
just have
something's happening.
I mean, to me, this is a sign of pure democracy rather than a republic. So this is just certain instances to where it's purely a democratic instance than a republic instance. Mm-hmm. And so that comes with its consequences at the same time as well.
And that is a criticism of initiatives and referendums, right?
Yeah, to where you shouldn't have to go through this way. But obviously we can see where from D.C. and Initiative 71 where, you know, they can still upend it in a way. But because I guess what I was just checking here is back in 98, they did a medical marijuana initiative in D.C. and Republicans kept delaying it for 11 years by keep adding it just like they did in the omnibus bill this last week and that's how they ended up tying it up in the legislature process for 11 years is what I just saw.
The interesting thing, and I threw this in the chat window, is it's interesting how, you know, when you're talking about Washington and Colorado. They passed, those initiatives passed between 55-56%. Washington, D.C. passed by 70%. So it was an overwhelming majority of, of the citizens who wanted it, you know, to make it happen, but it was still defeated in an omnibus bill for whatever reason. I don't know what the politics are there, why that would be the case. So it's like you're saying, Kirk, this has been around for a while. And for whatever reason, it's interesting how in the nation's capital, you look at something like marijuana, which is, specifically in Washington, D.C., the individuals who probably smoke marijuana more than anyone else are African-American. Individuals who go to jail because of marijuana are African-American, and how they want to keep it so tightly controlled. And I don't know why, that would be the case, because when you look at, various initiatives it's just initiatives. I thought it was referendums. This would be helping a demographic that is probably been victimized more than they probably should be.
I would disagree with your first statement.
What's the first statement?
That African Americans are the most prevalent to marijuana smokers.
No, they're the most convicted.
Convicted, yes.
Yeah, convicted.
But the stats are the exact same amongst all races and cultures.
But the key point is the same, though. The key point being who would benefit from, the legalization. That remains clear.
And who would not benefit?
And the African-American population.
Is the prison system, the justice system. It's all – there's a lot of money. I think what I just read is it's a year in jail for marijuana possession.
Yeah, and what I was trying to say, Kirk, is I completely agree with the fact that the prevalence of use in any ethnic group is pretty much the same. But in Washington, D.C., the African-American population is pretty substantial. It's pretty high. And
yes,
the rate of incarceration is pretty high there as well.
Well, that's everywhere throughout the entire United States and every prison. Yeah. It's totally a skewed thing, and I think that's going to end up being highlighted more and more in the coming years.
And I think that, go ahead.
Crime doesn't, the punishment doesn't fit the crime, and it's a populist movement to legalize it, and it's a freaking plant, for Christ's sakes. You can plant a seed and have it grow, and then the state's going to deem that illegal.
Put you in jail for growing a plant?
Come on.
But if we were to take this a step further, and I think we can get a little myopic in our viewpoint of the application of an initiative, and say is it just to legalize things that we want? No, it's also, we can make things illegal that we don't want. So we can even put rules in place for the government itself and how it has to operate.
Don't like this. That's why I was certain.
But I know you say, part of the flaw, if I can maybe be a little psychic here and presume where you might go with this, is that all laws are bad and it increases governmental power. And I get that. And don't get me wrong. I get that. But you can use this to put, some fences around what they're capable of doing. And you can undo the things that they have done. So it puts power out of the government and back in the hands of the people. And that's why this is really important. And this is why it's so powerful. Because instead of laying victimized as a people, subject to whatever some douchebag that got voted in decides to do, we can take the power back and say, no, we as a population want this. And we can put our votes where it matters, and we're not going to wait for you to put it on the ballot. We're putting it on the ballot, and we're going to make the change, and we're going to make this happen.
See, I don't like it.
Do you just like to be contrary? Is that it?
Precisely. No, but here's my point. It shouldn't have to ever come to that point. In the first
place. It's not a perfect world, and it never will be.
We already have constitutions.
People are playing this game, and so it has to be a perfect world. Is the second you're never going to get what you want.
What you were talking about.
You can't operate under the premise that it could ever be a perfect world, because it's never going to be. So if you go, well, we shouldn't have to do this.
Just let me speak for a second, Chelsea. quit putting words in my mouth here. The
this is what. Come on, buddy.
This is what I'm talking about. We already have the constraints for government. It's the Constitution. And each state has their own constitution. So to enact changes in that, that is a restraint on government. It's not telling what the government can do to us. It's telling the government it's constraining the government in the first place. So what you're saying there is to put further restraints on the government. That's totally unnecessary. Because
I disagree. Because
to me, it puts the mindset into more of democracy and the power of the people to have their whims and to be voted on, and it's a dangerous aspect of governance. And any amount of things to where all of a sudden you could have 55% of the state's population start enacting whatever they feel, and that's what our founding fathers were afraid of from a pure democracy.
I think one of the maybe I'm not going to speak for Chelsea. I'll just speak for myself. One of the more attractive attributes to initiatives or referenda is the fact that we elect in politicians to enact legislation that, you know, they may say they support, but they don't, and you know, it's more of a. I'm not a huge fan of this quote unquote, we the people who, you know, say this is the right, or this is the legislation or, you know, change that we want to see. We're voting for it. And, you know, most of the people who, I don't know, it's probably not most, but it's a chance for direct participation in legislation rather than indirect participation in legislation when you're voting for an individual who professes to say, you know, whatever party you're talking about to believe and will do what you're looking for, but then does the opposite or doesn't necessarily vote along the lines that you'd expect. And I think that's one of the reasons that you know, when you look at the U.S. House of Representatives or Senate, why there's such low approval ratings? You vote in people who, or individuals vote in people who they expect to enact, you know, specific legislation or law, but they don't do it. So initiatives are a way to circumvent that and to serve the will of the people. And I think, Chelsea, that's kind of. Yeah, that was kind of what you're getting at in bringing this up for, you know, as a subject for the podcast in general, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I mean, I understand the danger in allowing just the general population to vote on every single issue out there, which is why we have a representative government. And I get that, you know, indirect representation. However, understanding how difficult it is, you know, there is a lot of work that goes into putting an initiative forth and to get it on the ballot in the first place. So it's not like you can just grab, you know, the whim of every, you know, 55% or 51% of any population and that, you know, that will flow through on any given topic all the time. I mean, to say that would be to assume that all of the Western states are in pure chaos right now, which I don't think they are. I mean, they've had the ability to put forth initiatives and referenda for like 100 years now, and I don't think that it's really interfered with their ability to move forward in a cohesive fashion.
No, well, the only reason I brought it up is because you said to restrain government and to control government in a sense. I mean, that's not what
well,
it's there to intend.
It's
I mean, it's but,
oh,
but these initiatives
that's
have
exactly
been
where it came from.
No, these initiatives. I mean, it's spun in the media as well when they talk. Marijuana has not been legalized. It's decriminalized.
Let's quit going on the marijuana thing. I mean, there are so many.
Well, it's just the latest examples.
Ways that you can apply. I mean, there are so many. I'm just saying that you have to think about this, like, the bigger picture. Like, there are so many different ways that you can utilize these options.
To me, it's a last-ditch resort, and it shouldn't have to come to it. And that's why it just highlights the failure of our government. I was listening to something today about how when it comes down to what the populace wants, the average people of our country that aren't the wealthy or are super wealthy or these mega corporations that have a lot of vast controlling interests, when you look at what laws and regulations get passed, it's like 70 to 90% of what they want gets passed, but the public, what they want, is down to like 30 or 40, and it just shows that's where the direction of it is. And as that continues, that's not what America representation ever was intended to be, and that's why we're not when people come to our country now and think they have the freedom and opportunity of what they've had in their mind and what's, you know, when they come and they find out that it's nothing of the sort here. And that's, so to me, it just highlights the failures of what we were becoming and the direction we're headed. And it's just, I don't like that. If this continues to gain tread, I think it just is going to lead us towards more of a democracy. And what's to say you can't go and pass an initiative then that says everything needs to be put up to a popular vote in every measure of the state?
So, Kirk, you're not a fan of initiative. You think it should go through a representative Republican process rather than
I'm a fan and not a fan at the same time. I think it's a slippery slope. I don't think it's not used enough to be dangerous, but it just is unnecessary. I think a recall is more of a viable option, and or maybe accurate news. If politicians aren't doing what they want, you can either recall them early or vote them out next time. I think we live too much in the moment in America that we think that government needs to enact laws to support us. I mean, and how we live from year to year. I don't see a problem with waiting 2 years to vote someone out.
I feel like you're talking to people that aren't on this podcast. I mean, like, let's
talk. No, I'm just talking in general.
What I'm saying basically is that, like, I think that we can all agree. I think that I know you guys well enough to be able to say, I think that we can all agree that we're not a big fan of the way things have been going, the way that our liberties have been infringed upon, and the way the government's power has been used for means that are not in the best interests of you and I. I think that we can pretty much all agree on that. Stop me if I'm wrong there. But what I'm saying then is, do we continue to rely on the government that is not serving us, or do we try and create an opportunity to rein that in?
And that's what I'm saying is a dangerous aspect. To go out there and create an opportunity to rein it in, that just doesn't sound right. And that's not...
Well, it's better than what we've got. I mean, really? I mean, do we just keep going down this crappy road that... You just said,
an initiative is not going to change it, the direction.
Why?
It has changed it. Bringing initiatives, you can look at three or four instances within the last 3 or 4 years. It has changed it, where if you would entrust your state legislator to vote for it, it wouldn't pass. But if you present it to the general population, it does pass. So it very much does change the situation. So, you know, it gets down to, and I think what Chelsea is suggesting, it's a mechanism to reflect the citizens' view on any type of law or legal situation versus the professional politician view, which may be influenced by, you know, any number of outside factors. And I think what you're saying, Kirk, is you're concerned about mob rule, democracy mob rule, which may not be informed on the issues, versus professional legislation, which, you know, theoretically should be informed on the issues. But I think you, Chelsea, and I, and, you know, a lot of people listening to the podcast know that there are outside influences that are giving money to these politicians through lobbyists, you know, suggestions where it changes, you know, it changes the dynamic substantially. So I think that's, you know, either of you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's really the, you know, the gist of the conversation that we're having here.
Yes. Well, all right. This is my point. Obviously, I've stated many times before that I'm losing faith in the whole voting process in the beginning. So that goes strongly into why I'm arguing against this initiative. But it's the law's already there to limit government, and we've just gone away from this to where we – that's it just shows my point of that we think that we can go and vote to tell what our neighbors can and cannot do. And it, to me, it's the same thing, just reverse. I mean, it shouldn't have to be that way. The strongest thing to fight it is the mindset of the populace, of citizens in America, of to get back to the liberty roots and less government intervention, less reliance on the government as a whole. And to me, to sit there and say that we need initiative to pass a new law to restrain government is just unnecessary in my point of view.
And I feel like you're taking, you know, one example or one idea or one way in which initiatives can be applied and saying, well, I don't agree with that, so I'm going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm saying the sky's the limit here, and we can really think about how, you know, how we can use this to our benefit instead of what we're left with today. And
well, that's
and
my
what
point,
we're left
though.
With today, you know, and so
can't
no,
the
no,
reverse
no,
of liberty, say the strongest socialist tyrannical form of group that has their own little podcast,
but
say
you're
the sky's
into
the limit for this as well. If we can just get more people, if we can hoodwink people and they get out the vote to do this,
nobody's hoodwinking anybody. And I feel like you're running to the worst possible conclusions.
Well,
I'm just being
a realist here. That just because we think it's right,
I don't think
doesn't mean that anyone else is going to think it's right. I mean, can think it's right for their what they want in out of their country
half
or
the
state.
Half of the states in this country already have initiative and referendum, and they're not crumbling. They're not falling to pieces, you know. And I think that we have seen very real evidence of how this has created positive outcomes for people and allowed them to live a more free life according to what they want. And where people aren't going to jail over growing a plant, and where people are capable of marrying whoever they want, and where people
that's my whole point is
a
people,
life more liberty, that this has increased people's liberty.
But giving people welfare money from the government, confiscating people's money, redistributing it, can also give people more liberty and more a freer life because they don't have to go worry about being getting
but
the food and go.
It's
the same thing. For any direction you can, any whim, the sky's the limit.
Here's the difference between that example and the one that I just provided. In one case, people have the option now to do something or live a certain way, and that is in no way infringing upon other people's rights. Now, if you talk about, well, why don't we just give everybody, you know, like give this certain piece of the population, you know, government money, and they have more liberty because they have more money. Well, the difference is that you're reducing the liberty of others in order to do so. It's a zero-sum game where some people will benefit from having that government money. Other people are going to have less because they had to pay more in taxes. So that's a zero-sum game and not in any way a good apples-to-apples comparison of what we're talking about.
Actually,
here,
you just proved my point, because what you just talked about is the mindset and the principles of liberty, not a voter initiative, not a law from Congress or the state representation.
It's not a law from Congress.
It's the principles of liberty that cannot be forced upon people. It's that's what the principles that you have to live and deal with, and it's I don't know. To me, that just proved my point.
I do not see how you connected any dots there. Please explain, because I don't see it.
I'm not following.
Because you're arguing about what I was saying as an antithesis to liberty, that I was taking away people's liberty. But it's that's what I'm saying. No. So that's the principle of liberty. That's not.
That's
an analysis of law on a mindset and the principles around the aspects of liberty. So that doesn't mean that's how you analyze. That's not a directness of welfare versus granting deregulation or decriminalization.
Kirk, so when you're talking about referendums or initiatives, is your primary concern against kind of mob rule? Is that where you're
most, oh yeah, definitely. I think it can be used for good and bad. And yeah, I would love to see it being used for good to try and rein in government. But it'll get the direction the government is going. It'll just end up getting co-opted, and it'll end up biting us in the butt.
Yeah. So what you're getting at.
Our present good will be good, but years down the road, it end up being worse and worse. If you have 20 initiatives to vote for each election versus 1, 2, or 3.
We can look at the other states that have these and say, has that happened? And I don't think it has.
Let me continue on that.
Like so, what we said, we had no idea that this was possible.
Kirk.
When we came to this topic, Kirk. We were going to talk about how the good things we could do and how we can and cannot do this to set it up as a liberty aspect. Kirk. Yes, and I've gone a different direction. Sorry.
Okay. So getting back to what I was going to ask, is it your primary concern with referenda or initiatives is the malleability of the general populace. So when you talk about legislators or professional or unprofessional politicians who are voted in office, they have a bit, you'd expect them to have a bit more knowledge, even though most of them don't really read the bills that they vote for. A small number of them actually do, but you'd expect them to have a bit more knowledge about the various initiatives that they're voting for. Whereas with the general public, they're influenced by marketing, advertising. A vast majority may be swayed in one direction or another, and that's the slippery slope that you're referring to, correct?
Well, that is the main part, but my other main part is I don't derive my liberties from government. I don't open the rule books of our state or federal government and derive what I believe is moral and just for my life. I look to universal principles and principles of liberty to determine my course of life, not the laws, and that could get me in trouble and cannot. And I find it outrageous that when I am not bothering anyone, not harming anyone, not stealing from anyone, and generally kinder than the general public out there, that I can be living an immoral life from what the government's regulations and laws in their books are. And that's where I just don't think that it's, to me, the greater aspect is the aspect that, well, we can, through initiatives and referendums, we can help create the laws and regulations that would make our liberty greater. But no, I think that our concepts come from a higher power than the government state. That's my main point.
Okay.
Well, and I get the the sovereign philosophy, but I'm trying to be more practical. Well, that maybe is an argument for another time.
Well, Kirk.
This is what I'm saying.
Chelsea.
You can say, I take my rights from a higher power And I don't need to listen to no government because I'm above that because they answer to me. And I get that that's how it's actually supposed to be. I get what the founders meant to do, and I understand the whole theory of common law, and I get that. But from a practicality standpoint, what happens if you break one of their laws, you know, one of the statutory laws? You go to jail. You get arrested. And so even though it might be wrong and it might be illegal for these statutory laws to have somehow taken over common law, it still has happened. And I'm trying to figure out how we can make practical changes, how we can actually make a difference. Because that fight, as you know, your uncle's fighting that fight. And has he changed this country? You know, has he really brought common law to the forefront and gotten rid of the statutory law? No, he hasn't. And he will dedicate his whole life to doing so, and it will not happen. I mean, I hate to say
care.
It. I hate
that's,
to be rude.
That's irrelevant,
and you can,
though.
And you
totally
can do
irrelevant.
That. You can fight that battle, that. But that battle will not win. I'm just going to tell you right now, and that might be cynical, but I'm telling you, I don't see it happening. I do not see in a million years that war being won. So what I'm trying to do and the angle that I'm coming at it from is to say, regardless of what's right or wrong, what should be or shouldn't be, this is where we're at. And this is the world and this is the framework in which we're living and what we have to deal with. So how can we best, you know, create positive change knowing that? And how can we practically make it better? You know, regardless of what should be or shouldn't be, this is what it is. And how do we move forward in that system? Like, what's the most realistic possibility for creating a better world for us today, tomorrow, and our prosperity in the future?
To take
like, what's
care
the
of
most
yourself.
Realistic?
To take care of yourself. That's the best way. Is it take
well,
care
yes,
of
we should. We, yeah, yes, we should take care of ourselves. But what beyond that? You know,
if you want to be a part of the system, by all means, be a part of the system. But I, you're going to see who's going to end up winning. Is that the more people with the more interest and the more money to control the system? Because it's because it ends up being down to economic issues and
have a job. You pay for your tabs. Right? You get your license renewed. You are in the system, Kirk. Period. You are. You play by the rules.
I'm not talking about myself here. I'm trying to
I
talk
am. You're saying I live by a higher code and I don't want this.
No, I'm saying, yeah, I derive my principles in life from something higher than what the government's freaking mile-high book of laws and regulations are. That's my point. And I don't need other laws to be repealed to determine my morality and code of ethics.
Well, I don't think that this is about morality or ethics. This is about creating an opportunity for us to live lives according to how we see fit and allowing the liberty and the breathing room in order to do so without fear of incarceration or fines.
What initiative has enacted further liberty in about this is a powerful new thing, the sky's the limit. So what is this going to do?
It's not a new thing, Kirk.
Since
it's
you're just ragging on the sovereignty movement.
I'm not ragging on the sovereignty movement, Kirk. This is not a personal attack.
Totally brought it into a personal attack, Chelsea.
I'm sorry if you took it personally. What I'm saying is that I look at this from a practical standpoint and I don't see us, you know, I don't see that going anywhere. I just don't. Should it? Do I believe in it? I'm telling you, I have a lot of respect for that and I believe in that. And I think that that is more just and fair than anything else I've ever heard. However, I don't see it as a practical measure working out.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to control the situation of this conversation. I was stating my opinions, and we can go beyond it.
No, I'm just, like, all I'm saying is that when it comes to, like, how, like I'm trying to be a problem solver. And I'm saying, look, here we are, we found ourselves in this situation. this country and the way that it was set up has been an experiment from the get-go. It's like something the world has never seen before, and we're learning these lessons along the way, and we're learning what things work, what things don't, what things shouldn't have worked or should have worked, but then maybe got corrupted or overtaken along the way. And I, as, you know, just an individual in this country, am trying to look at it and go, okay, how can we solve the issues that we're seeing here? What are some practical ways that we as individuals can, instead of going like, this sucks or this shouldn't be this way, how can we create change to make it how we want it? How can we take hold again and move forward and, you know, either prevent more corruption or prevent the legislature from getting in our way? How do we do this? How do we move forward? How do we solve the problems instead of, you know, sitting around and going like, this sucks, but there's nothing I can do about it. Instead, we say, this sucks. What can we do about it?
You've shot down every idea I've had.
Which is kind of the, when you talk about voter initiatives, I think that's what you're referencing, Chelsea, gets right down to the basic desire behind initiatives, because you have to go out and collect X amount of signatures. You have to educate, individuals on what, why they are signing a petition. You have to actually get it on the ballot. You have to inform voters and get it passed. Whereas if you're talking about the alternate route, you hope your house. Well, it goes, you know, if you're talking about a typical state trajectory, you have to introduce a bill in the House, it passes, and then goes to the Senate, it passes, it gets signed into law by a governor, and you influence that process as much as you can through citizen activism, but you have countering forces that, you know, may, who knows, there are any number of interests that, in a lot of the time, highly financed interests that may be pushing for or against a certain initiative. So when you're talking about initiatives, and I think I said this before, really what we're talking about is grassroots initiatives by the people getting it passed, because they think it's mm-hmm. right. And that's a way to circumvent corrupt politicians, corrupt moneyed interests. And, you know, it may not be perfect all the time, but it's something that has proven to be effective and may be more effective than counting on your voted politicians to perform in the way that you'd expect them to when they don't. And I think that's the main, I think that's, Chelsea, that's one of the reasons why you brought this topic up in the first place, right?
Exactly why. Yeah.
So, you know, we can talk about being sovereign not counting on the people to do the right thing. But what we have increasingly in the United States, when you're talking about federal or state politics, you have large money interests dominating the conversation. They win because they have highly financed corporate interests or private interests that move legislation in their way. It's not necessarily the way of the people. And I think that's the reason why we're talking about initiatives and referendums. It's not perfect. There's, you know, nothing in social interactions or government policy is perfect, but it certainly is worth talking about. And there's been some, you know, there have been some positive actions that have resulted from initiatives, you know, that, you know, they may not be a part of the sovereign movement, but they certainly are, they're positive. There's been some positives as a part of the liberty movement. And I think, you know, as far as I'm concerned, and probably Chelsea's concerned, that's what we're talking about here.
Yes. And I think that the greatest aspect of voter initiative is the fact of the grassroots part, to where you have to go out there, knock on doors, get signatures, get people involved in the process that makes them interested, that it comes and makes them vote. So for that aspect alone, that it might create that mindset of growth through for whatever measure you're trying to get passed. But so
yeah, I like that. It gets people involved in the process. I feel like because we have had such a two-party system, and a lot of people say, you know, the lesser of two evils, ha ha ha, and that they don't, that neither party is really representative of any of the people in particular, that, you know, this is a way. This is a way for the people to have a voice, you know.
But
and they've shown that people tend to be more involved in the political process when there is an initiative, because they feel as though they're a part of it now. If they feel as though they're involved, they will become more engaged in the political process. They will pay more attention. They will do more research when they feel as though it is part of their responsibility. When there's somebody else doing, you know, there's some senator somewhere, you know, making the decision on this bill or that bill, people don't feel as though they're really involved, so they don't take that on any responsibility. Whereas when you have an initiative, people feel as though they do have a little bit more of a responsibility, and that's just a positive, you know, byproduct of having, you know, the initiative option. You know, it's getting people to feel as though this is a responsibility, which it is, and it is whether or not there is initiative, but people feel it more when there is an initiative.
That may work for you, but it doesn't work for me. I don't.
Yeah, like, but we all know you're. Yeah, but I mean, one person doesn't really represent the population at large. And God knows, Kirk, I would not compare
I will love to challenge you though that you think that the sovereign movement has done no good and will do no good. One person can go and challenge any law. And I guarantee more sovereign and mindsetted people have changed this country for to have more laws repealed than any other initiative or referendum or any little group has done. That it happens behind the scenes that laws get repealed and deemed unconstitutional on a yearly basis from people that you will never hear about.
All kinds of conclusions. Because I never said it did no good. I just don't think we're ever going to get to a point where common law supersedes law ever again. And that's what I was saying. And I wasn't.
Well, I didn't say that once tonight.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't say you said it. I'm telling you, this is what I'm saying. And I didn't say that sovereign
movement. You did totally infer me as saying that. So,
if you interpreted it that way, that's the way that you interpreted it. But why I'm clarifying.
I don't know. Call my uncle out. That has nothing to do with it.
So that you can better understand what I mean by this. And so I'll reiterate in a different way so that you can better understand what I meant by it. Because if I wasn't clear, I want to be clear. And what I mean by this is that we can say the system shouldn't be this way, so I'm going to operate how I believe is right and just, and that's good. But I just don't think on a realistic level that we're ever going to get the general population to all come together in sovereignty. I just don't see.
I'm glad. Good. I don't think it's necessary.
But this is I'm reiterating, this is what I meant by that. I think that it's good that people are willing to stand up for their values and passionately live their lives accordingly. I think that's fantastic. But I'm trying to look at this from a practical measure and say, what can I reasonably expect of the general population, and how can I see changes being made in the future practically? And that's what I'm talking about here. It's not about what's right or wrong, good or bad. It's about what's the most realistic way to make the changes we want to see. And I think initiative and referenda are two great ways to do that.
Maybe.
You ready to wrap it up, Kirk?
Yes. Anything you guys want? Anything else?
I've got nothing else. I think there is that conflict when you're talking about referenda or initiatives between mob rule or the voice of the people and delegating your political responsibility to politicians. And unfortunately, in the United States, the way it stands now in many other countries, for me personally, I would love to delegate my political decisions to someone who I deem to be a good arbiter of whatever law, you know, is going to be decided upon. But where we stand now, I have seen no evidence that our politicians are acting, for the most part, on behalf of the citizens. So when you look at referenda or initiatives, that's a way to circumvent a problem. Because the best case scenario would be to have those people, you vote them in office, they make the right decisions. But where we stand today, there's such muddied interest in place that affects the conversation, the debate, that we don't see what we should see. So you can talk about that in the realm of financial policy, civil rights, privacy. It's not happening on behalf of the people. So when that's not happening, I think it's thoughtful to look at alternative mechanisms to circumvent that. So I think that's what we've been talking about with the referenda and initiative policy. And it's a good debate to have. And there's conversations on both sides to have, which we've had. So I think it's been good.
I definitely agree. I know what I need to know now about initiatives and referendums, and I haven't been disappointed with what I've seen in the last few years. So,
yep, it's been good.
That's right. You want anything else, Chelsea?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, you've heard an unscripted, unrehearsed, casual conversation with Liberty Southwest about initiatives and referendums. So hopefully you had fun. Next week's conversation should be fun as well. Hopefully we'll see you there. Thanks, everyone.
Take care.
Adios, mofo.